ज्ञानतिमरन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, on the request of His Grace, Tushta Krishna Prabhu. In the next 4 days, we'll talk about Gajendra, the elephant. And this is from 8th Canto, beginning at chapter 2. I'll read the introductory paragraphs and then the verses up to which for some I'm going to cover today, which is number 30. Chapter 2, the elephant, Gajendra's crisis. The second, third, and fourth chapters of this canto describe how the Lord, during the reign of the fourth Manu, gave protection to the king of the elephants. As described in the second chapter, when the king of the elephants, along with his female elephants, was enjoying the water, a crocodile suddenly attacked him, and the elephants surrendered to the lotus feet of the personality of God for protection. In the midst of the ocean of milk, there is a very high and beautiful mountain that has an altitude of 10,000 yojanas, or 80,000 miles. This mountain is known as Trikuta. In a valley of Trikuta, there is a nice garden named Ruttumat, which was constructed by Varuna. And in that area, there's a very nice lake. Once the chief of the elephants, along with his female elephants, went to enjoy bathing in that lake, and they disturbed the inhabitants of the water. Because of this, the chief crocodile in that water, who was very powerful, immediately attacked the elephant's leg. Thus, there ensued a great fight between the elephant and the crocodile. This fight continued for 1,000 years. Neither the elephant nor the crocodile died. But since they were in the water, the elephant gradually became weak, whereas the power of the crocodile increased more and more. Thus, the crocodile became more and more encouraged. Then the elephant, being helpless and seeing that there was no other way for his protection, sought shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of God. Text number 1. Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear king, there is a very large mountain named Trikuta. It is 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles high. Being surrounded by the ocean of milk, it is very beautifully situated." Text 2 and 3. "The length and breadth of the mountain are of the same measurement, 80,000 miles. Its three principal peaks, which are made of iron, silver, and gold, beautify all directions in the sky. The mountain also has other peaks, which are full of jewels and minerals, and are decorated with nice trees, creepers, and shrubs. The sounds of the waterfalls on the mountain create a pleasing vibration. In this way, the mountain stands, increasing the beauty in all directions." Text 4. "The ground at the foot of the mountain is always washed by waves of milk that produce emeralds all around in the 8 directions, north, south, east, west, and the directions midway between them." Purport. From Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that there are various oceans. Somewhere, there is an ocean filled with milk. Somewhere, an ocean of liquor, an ocean of ghee, an ocean of oil, an ocean of sweet water. Thus, there are different varieties of oceans within this universe. The modern scientists, who have only limited experience, cannot define these statements. They cannot give us full information about any planet, even the planet on which we live. From this verse, however, we can understand that if the valleys of some mountains are washed with milk, this produces emeralds. No one has the ability to imitate the activities of material nature as conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 5. "The inhabitants of the higher planets, the Siddhas, Charmas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, serpents, Kinnaras, and Apsaras, go to that mountain to sport. Thus all the caves of the mountain are full of these denizens of the heavenly planets. As ordinary men may play in the salty ocean, the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems go to the ocean of milk. They float in the ocean of milk and also enjoy various sports within the caves of the Tripura Mountain. Text 6. Because of the resounding vibrations of the denizens of heaven singing in the caves, the lions there being very proud of their strength roar with unbearable envy, thinking that another lion is roaring in that way. Purport. In the higher planetary systems, there are not only types, different types of human beings, but also animals, like lions and elephants. There are trees, and the land is made of emeralds. Such is the creation of the Supreme Personality of God. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur has sung in this regard, Keshava, Tuya Jagata Vichitra. My dear Lord Keshava, your creation is colorful and full of varieties. Geologists, botanists, and other so-called scientists speculate about other planetary systems, but being unable to estimate the varieties on other planets, they falsely imagine that all planets but this one are vacant, uninhabited, and full of dust. Although they cannot even estimate the varieties existing throughout the universe, they are very proud of their knowledge, and they are accepted as learned by persons of a similar caliber. As described in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.19, Shravi Varahushakarai Samstuta Purushakushavu, materialistic leaders are praised by dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, and they themselves are also big animals. One should not be satisfied with the knowledge imparted by a big animal. Rather, one must take knowledge from a perfect person like Shri Goswami. Mahajanamiya Gatasapanta. Our duty is to follow the instructions of the Mahajanas. There are 12 Mahajanas, and Shri Goswami is one of them. Swayapur Narada Shambhu, Kumara Kapiloguru, Hataro Janako Kishmo, Bhadir Vayasa Kirvayam, Bhagavatam 6.3.20. Vayasaki is Shukadeva Goswami. Who's Vayasaki?
Shukadeva Goswami.
Whatever he says, we consider to be factual. That is perfect knowledge. Text number 7. The valleys beneath Tripura Mountain are beautifully decorated by many varieties of jungle animals. And in the trees, which are maintained in gardens by the demigods, varieties of birds chirp with sweet voices. 8. Tripura Mountain has many lakes and rivers with beaches covered by small gems resembling grains of sand. The water is as clear as crystal. And when the demigod damsels bathe in it, their bodies lend fragrance to the water and the breeze, thus enriching the atmosphere. Report. Even in the material world, there are grades of living entities. The human beings on earth generally cover themselves with external fragrances to stop their bad bodily odors. But here we find that because of the bodily fragrance of the demigod damsels, the rivers, the lakes, the breeze, and the entire atmosphere of Tripura Mountain also become fragrant. Since the bodies of the damsels in the upper planetary systems are so beautiful, we can just imagine how beautifully formed are the bodies of the Vaikuntha damsels, the damsels in Vrindavan, the gopis. Text 9-13. In the valley of Tripura Mountain, there was a garden named Ritumat. This garden belonged to the great devotee Varuna and was a sporting place for the damsels and the demigods. Flowers and fruits grew there in all seasons. Among them were mandaras, parijatas, patalas, patalas, ashokas, champakas, chutas, piyamas, banasas, mangoes, amaratakas, kramukas, coconut trees, date trees, and pomegranates. There were matukas, palm trees, tamalas, asanas, arjunas, arishas, unduparas, plakshas, banyan trees, kintsukas, and sandalwood trees. There were also pichumardas, kovidaras, sarvas, sudadarus, grapes, sugarcane, bananas, jambu, badaris, akshas, abhyasas, and amalakis. Can anyone name them back? One. Two. All of them in succession. After that, we have to have. Okay. Text number 19. In that garden, there was a very large lake filled with shining golden lotus flowers, and the flowers known as Kumuda, Kalara, Utpala, Shatapatra, which added excellent beauty to the mountain. There were also Bilva, Kapita, Jambira, and Balatakas. Thus, while the elephant became reduced in strength, the crocodile became more and more powerful. Now, from this we may take the lesson that in our fight with Maya, we should not be in a position in which our strength, enthusiasm, and senses will be unable to fight vigorously. Our Krishna consciousness movement has actually declared war against the illusory energy, in which all the living entities are rotting in a false understanding of civilization. The soldiers in this Krishna consciousness movement must always possess physical strength, enthusiasm, and sensual power. To keep themselves fit, they must therefore place themselves in a normal condition of life. What constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone, and therefore there are divisions of varnashrama: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasa. Especially in this age, Kali Yuga, it is advised that no one takes sannyas. Ashvamedam galabampam sannyasam kalapaitrakam divarina sutopati kalapancha divarjayet from the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. From this we can understand that in this age the sannyas ashrama is forbidden because people are not strong. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us an example of taking sannyas at the age of 24 years, but even Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya advised Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be extremely careful because he had taken sannyas at an early age. For preaching, we give young boys sannyas, but actually it is being experienced that they are not fit for sannyas. There is no harm, however, if one thinks he is unfit for sannyas. If he is very much agitated sexually, he should go to the ashram where sex is allowed, namely the Grihastha ashram. That one has been found to be very weak in one place does not mean that you should stop fighting the crocodile of Maya. One should take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, as we shall see Gajendra do. And at the same time, one can be a Grihastha if he is satisfied with sexual indulgence. There is no need to give up the fight. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore recommended, Stani Svita Shikagatam Tanu Van Manobi. One may stay in whatever ashram is suitable for him. It is not essential that one take sannyas. If one is sexually agitated, he can enter the Grihastha ashram, but one must continue fighting. For one who is not in a transcendental position, to take sannyas artificially is not a very great credit. If sannyas is not suitable, one may enter the Grihastha ashram and fight Maya with great strength. But one should not give up the fighting and go away.
Thereafter,
Because of being pulled into the water and fighting for many long years, the elephant became diminished in his mental, physical, and sensual strength. The crocodile, on the contrary, being an animal of the water, increased in enthusiasm, physical strength, and sensual power. Here are some instructions, lessons from Gajendra that can save one's life in devotional service and help one avoid many unnecessary difficulties. And that is this instruction to find what is the normal condition of life so that one can have sensual strength, enthusiasm, and so forth in performing devotional service. And this is practical because if one artificially tries to do something that he or she is not able to do, there's no great credit. In fact, it's a fault. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna says, Sve Svayadi Kariya Nishta Saguna Parikirtita Vipariyo Tudosha Sya. Last line. Anyway, it says Esha Nishtara. It's a fixed principle that when one acts sway sway according to one's own adhikari, one's qualification at that particular time, sway sway adhikari anishta, that's a good quality. Where it says the opposite is true, that if one tries to do more than one's qualified for, it's not becoming, it's not attractive. In fact, it's a fault. Viparya doshasya, it's a dosha, it's a fault. The opposite of doing what you're qualified for, or what you feel you can naturally achieve. And therefore, Prabhupada mentions in this verse that there's accommodations for everybody in each ashram and varna. There's a way in which there are gradations even within those varnas and ashrams. For instance, for varnaprasthas, there's four gradations. That means there's four ways in which they can gradually increase their attachment to Krishna and their detachment from the material world. And there's also, in the sannyasa ashram, it's not just an abrupt act of renouncing one's family, but there's Bahudak Kritichak Parivrajakacharya and Paramahamsa. These four stages are mentioned. In fact, the first stage of sannyas in the Kritichak means that the man leaves the family but stays close by in a little kutir, and the family comes by with a little food and pushes it through the hole. You all right? It's all right. And then they put it in there and he eats. And then, so there's still some connection, but they're cultivating detachment and getting used to it gradually. And so how do you like that? Well, I like parts of it, and the other parts I'm getting used to. But as one gains strength in that particular place, then one progresses to being a Bahudak. Bahudak? Kutichak. Then one goes out to the field and collects grains, no longer accepts food from home. And goes out to the grains where there's extra, there's always extra. In the agricultural fields, there's so much extra, you could start your own business selling the extra. In fact, that's what Jim and Todd did out in California. They saw so much extra, they started a huge business just selling all the extra stuff. So there's always extra lying around, and one can go off and collect that and then take that as one's sustenance and start getting used to the fact gradually that, oh, Krishna's providing. I don't have to work really hard in one place. I can simply gather what's available. And then comes Parivrajakacharya, where one wanders the world and begins to teach others from because one has an advanced perspective of spiritual life. And finally, there's Paramahamsa, in which a time in which one retires and simply goes deeply within one's own practice of devotional service. Isn't it interesting that there's various stages organized like that? So that one can progressively make advancement and find a niche where one feels encouraged and one feels strong, a place to be strong to fight against Maya. So this example of Gajendra is that he is the water, that he is weak in the water but strong on the land. And the crocodile is weak on the land and strong in the water. So when Gajendra, although he has so many assets and he's so powerful, comes into the water and he's captured by the crocodile, he's going to lose. And Prabhupada wrote this purport right around the time that there were some devotees who had accepted sannyas, or at least one anyway, who had left, and it caused a ripple effect through the society. And he very openly expressed what to do about it, foreseeing that this could happen again, can happen to anybody, and giving an idea of how one should think about these things for one's own life and in the life of others, how to objectively observe the situation and then readjust it. In fact, life is a series of readjustments. Finding how I can readjust now and come back towards the center and come back towards the ideal and keep working towards the goal. And in the final statement of this purport, Prabhupada says that one should go on fighting no matter what. This is one of my favorite mantras, which we've extracted from the purport of Tatke Anukampa Susurikshamanu, from the 10th canto, 14th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Lord Brahma is praying to Lord Krishna. And most of you know this verse, Tatte Anukampam Susumikshamanam Ujjana Eva Ukritam Vibhakam Rit Bhagavur Vir Viranam Namaste Jiveta Yomukti Pradesh Sadaya Bhak. And it says that a devotee who has taken this attitude that I'm going to patiently wait for the Lord's causeless mercy to come to me. Meanwhile, I'll go on with my service no matter what. And whatever adversities come to me, I'll accept as purification and with the understanding that I've caused them myself. They're not coming from anywhere else except from my own misdeeds in the past. And Lord Brahma finishes the statement by saying that anyone who adopts this position in life is fit to inherit the kingdom of God. And in the purport, the commentator, Kriyananda Das Goswami, has given the commentary of Sridhar Swami, who commented on this verse, and who said that the son of a rich man has one duty, and that's to remain alive, because he'll inherit the wealth of the father. He just stays alive. And therefore, it's one's duty to stay alive in Krishna consciousness one way or the other. And it's a rough and tumble world, isn't it? Or is it just me? There's adversity at every step, and there are forever obstacles that come up in every circumstance. And one who takes the accepts a strategy to adapt to these in such a way that one can go on doing one's service and fighting with Maya vigorously can actually grow internally to understand that I have the capability of adjusting in such a way that I can go on with my service no matter what. And that's the main point, to go on fighting with Maya, to go on with one's service despite the external obstacles. However, if one finds oneself in such a circumstance that is so disturbing or enervating to one's mind and consciousness that one can't perform one's service, one has to take superior guidance and help how to adjust the situation so that one can be in that situation. That is, in a situation where he or she feels strong and enthusiastic to go on fighting with Maya. And now, I know I'm reading a lot today, we have a few days, and I'm going to read you a purport that's going to change your life forever. And you'll be jumping for joy after you hear this, and walking up and down Cherry Street telling everyone you hear about this herb work, that although you've read it many years ago, or recently even, you have forgotten how profound it is. And it relates to this entire topic. So now, with your permission, I'll read it. Yes, Vaisheshi Kadas, read it as fast as you can. I would like to hear the purport. It changed my life forever. This is from the Sri Chaitanya Charita Mata Lila, chapter 23. Chapter title is Life's Ultimate Goal. Text number 105. Jutta Vairakta Stiti Shabho Shikhaida Shukra Vairakta Jnana Shabho Nishatila. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then told Sanatana Goswami about proper renunciation according to a particular situation, and the Lord forbade dry renunciation and speculative knowledge in all respects. Purport. This is the technique for understanding Shukra Vairagya and Yukta Vairagya. The Bhagavad Gita 6:17 says, Yuktahara viharasya, yukta cheshtasya karmasu, yukta swapnava bodhasya, yoga pavatitukaha. He who is temperate in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. To broadcast the cult of Krishna consciousness, one has to learn the possibility of renunciation in terms of country, time, and candidate. A candidate for Krishna consciousness in the Western countries, it should be taught about the renunciation of material existence, but one would teach candidates from a country like India, in a different way. The teacher, Acharya, has to consider time, candidate, and country. He must avoid the principle of Niyamagraha. That is, he should not try to perform the impossible. He should not try to do what?
Perform the impossible.
That makes life easier, doesn't it? What is possible in one country may not be possible in another. The Acharya's duty is to accept the essence of devotional service. There may be a little change here and there as far as yukta vairagya, proper renunciation, is concerned. Dry renunciation is forbidden by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we have also learned this from our spiritual master, His Divine Grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Goswami Maharaj. The whole thing and make you watch yourself, which is very difficult to do. And then, you know, say you did this. And you can't tell. Actually, one of the exercises is they hand you a paragraph, like something from Shakespeare, from anything, from any book or magazine, and they ask you to read it dramatically, but so overly dramatically that they call it the bozo zone. Try to get into the bozo zone. Gesticulate and speak in such a way that's so grandiose that you think you're really over the top. And then when they show you the video for public speaking, it's about right where it should be. And the point is that our self-perception is usually not very good. So it's good to take help from those we trust outside mentors who can help us adjust our situation. We have to adjust anyway. We'll be forced to adjust by the senses or the power of material nature, or if we're intelligent and stay one step ahead, we can take intelligent help from those who know how to do that and be rightly situated in devotional service. Is that right? Nirukula, were you raring to say something?
Well, I was just going to bring up the point about taking guidance, and because usually at the point where we need an adjustment, we're bewildered, we're not in the state to make the decisions ourselves. And at any time there's a big decision in our life, it's good to take the advice and guidance of either peers that we trust or, you know, an elder
or two.
I was wondering if you can elaborate on how our external practice of bhakti yoga and parinirvana, the real principles and although they're external processes, how they assist or how they correlate with the internal practice of bhakti yoga.
Well, if you're out of balance in your life, it's very difficult to concentrate on your spiritual life. And we have two sides to our life. We have the material side and we have our spiritual side. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions this in his Jagadharma, where he says that our material side of our life is called Vyavaharika, and the spiritual side is called Paramartika. And we have to acknowledge that we have these two sides. You can't artificially deny one side. In fact, I just read a verse in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the section of Varnashrama, that I think is a really good discussion point for grihasthas and everybody else, in which it is said that grihastha should be detached from his family, but internally, but be very much attached externally. That is, sometimes I've seen in the history of our movement that grihasthas, for instance, have acted detached from their family, much to the chagrin of everybody in the family, and much to the detriment also. Because people need psychological, emotional support. You can't do without that. You can't just say, you know, I'm going to go live in Himalayan Peak and forget everything, because we have certain needs. And there's a way in which we have to balance the two in order to be whole and mature. And only somebody who's internally advanced can actually extend themselves externally without feeling, for instance, diminished by that. The point is, sometimes, I'm giving the example of householders and grihasthas. I know most of you are brahmacharis, many of you. But still, the point is that unless you're fortified inside and you have strong spiritual self-esteem, it's difficult to extend yourself externally and be attached externally in the way that people need that. People need emotional counseling and help and just for you to be a real person. There's a way in which, after the battle of Kurukshetra, Yudhishthira Maharaj was disconsolate and overwhelmed. All of them were overwhelmed with grief. It's a grieving process. And you say, they're pure devotees, why are they grieving? It says in the Bhagavad Gita that an advanced devotee grieves neither for the living nor the dead, so what's their problem? But the fact is, we're a combination of matter and spirit, and even a pure devotee grieves, but he processes it differently than everybody else. And Krishna performed the last rites for the dead relatives. They went through all the process, and they grieved properly. And this relates to the fact that we have external needs. The body and the mind have ways of functioning, and they're affected according to our previous karmas and actions and so forth. So we have to accommodate that. That's Varnashrama. We have to accommodate that so we can be properly situated and comfortable. And then simultaneously, one goes on with the vigorous execution of one's spiritual practice from that position. But if you're out of balance on the side externally, it's very difficult to concentrate internally and keep going with your spiritual life. Did that help? Shamya Pras.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the next class. I'm wondering if you can help us to understand what the difference is between the essential aspects of devotional service and the aspects that can and should be adjusted according to personal need. That's kind of a big question, but at least how does one become qualified to understand the difference between the two?
Between
mean, let's say,
what's
you know,
essential? What's essential for your
chance? Hare Krishna is essential. But I mean, even Srila Prabhupada is making an adjustment based on the circumstance that someone fell down from sannyas, but still lets them be engaged, which is pretty liberal and pretty forward thinking in that context. So, how do we understand how much can be changed without losing the essence, and how much?
Well, Prabhupada said when he was asked that question, the specific question Prabhupada was asked. How do you understand the difference between a principle and a detail? The Prabhupada said that requires some intelligence. So you have to be intelligent. And that intelligence has to be based on your sincerity. If you're sincere and you want to advance in devotional service, Prabhupada mentions in the verse, Tesham satati yutanam pajatam priti kortanam tadami kuri yovantam yenamam upriyantite. That because Krishna's guiding us from within the heart, he's helping, that even if someone isn't intelligent enough to take advantage of a spiritual master, but is sincere, then somehow or other, he'll get guidance from within and gradually be able to make advancement in devotional life. So sincerity is ironclad, and those who want to advance in devotional service will gravitate towards those things which are particularly helping them. At the same time, we should be careful about readjusting those principles that are given through the acharyas, just as much as if you go to a class in chemistry and sit down and you start dictating to the teacher that, you know, I don't like some of these principles here in the textbook. Who are you? You just walked in. You're the student, not the teacher. And there's a way you have to take the position that there are certain principles laid out already, and you can identify them because they're labeled principles, and other things are labeled details, for the most part. And the part that's gray area, you have to be very sincere about seeing what's actually nourishing your devotional practice and take guidance as well, and not try to take advantage of it. Because there's a way in which sometimes people come along and they'll try to reclassify things as details because it's expedient for their sense gratification. And so you want to be careful about that. And how are you careful? You have to triangulate. You have to look at Shastra, you have to look at... and it's important, especially for us, to read Prabhupada's purports very thoroughly. So you start getting a overall feeling for how Prabhupada is emphasizing certain things over others. And if you read all kinds of books from all over the place, you might start introducing new ideas and saying, no, this is more important. I've heard people give classes about the Hari Bhakti Vilas and say that, you know, if you're not following Bhishma Panchaka in the last 5 days of Kartik, you might as well commit suicide. Because and Prabhupada just says right in here in his purport, he adjusts that. He says in his purport that the Hari Bhakti Vilas was written at a particular time, and Shri Sanatana Goswami is catering to some degree to these people so that he can inject the bhakti part. And you want to know Prabhupada's opinion? Read his books. At the end of his life, he said, everything I had to say, I put in my books. And so, if you read all of them, and you read them all the time, constantly, it helps you to actually adjust and see what's a principle and what's a detail. Because you go, oh yeah, Prabhupada said that's a detail. They said, no, that's a principle. And you can tell, because he said it. In fact, you know, like there's some purports that are very astounding, like when Prabhupada talks about the mad elephant offense. You think, what is the mad elephant offense? The Prabhupada, in his purport, says, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master, that's the mad elephant offense. To stop following the four regular principles, or to stop chanting Hare Krishna. Prabhupada talks about what is nonviolence, and then he gives his definition of nonviolence, to stop preaching Krishna consciousness. He has a way of looking at things, and if you want to get a good idea and follow in his footsteps as the founder of Charya, you read assiduously and you start to get a composite view of what to do and what not to do. That's practical, isn't it?
Well, that's where it gets confusing. Because I'm talking about the the culture, and then now that some people say that Chil Kampot is coming from a different culture, so how do you, like even in America there's more than one culture. There's some very conservative people, and then there's, in the cities, the big cities, there's much more liberal-minded people. So that's a question that comes up in my mind a lot. Chil Kampot does have ways of making adjustments and
yeah, so let's see how Prabhupada made the adjustments by reading his book. So at one point, devotees came to Krishna conscious movement, you come in and you shave your head, and you dress like a Vaishnava. And then some of the devotees, particularly Bhaktadas, who was a visionary, and he was trying to increase book distribution, he found out that every time you walk into a mall wearing a dhoti and a shaved head, you get kicked out. So he thought, why don't we try something different? We'll go to the Goodwill and clothes for all the devotees so they can go in and stay in the mall and distribute books to their heart's content. So he did that, and then somebody complained, and Prabhupada said that they're violating the principle that you set, you know, to look like a Vaishnava. And Prabhupada said, tell them to stop doing that. He thought they were turning back into hippies. And then another devotee wrote back and said, but Prabhupada, they're doing that specifically to increase book distribution, and the results are this and this and this, which means they're tripling what they were doing before. And Prabhupada wrote back and said, tell them to go ahead and do it. And then he wrote in his purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the section of Maharaj Pratyaparudra, who changed his royal dress to come in and meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Mahaprabhu didn't want to meet a king. He actually wanted to meet Maharaj Pratyaparudra, but he didn't externally want to meet, show that he was talking to a king. So Pratyaparudra adjusted the situation. He understood the principle. Meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Everyone was saying, Mahaprabhu was saying, no, I won't meet you. And everyone was saying, no, he'll meet you. So it's like, what? So he changed his dress. He went in and offered a prayer. Mahaprabhu embraced him and said, you are giving me such precious things by saying these verses and so forth. So the Prabhupada writes in the purport that this is an intelligent adjustment to change one's external appearance so that one can prosecute Krishna consciousness. I mean, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did it. So that's just one particular incident, but you get the idea, the mood of it. Now someone can then just, you know, extrapolate from that and say, well then, let's just change everything. But did the prophet say change everything? He said change according to what's utilitarian, what works for that principle of preaching. And he's following, if you look at the history, what the mood of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was. Which was, find out what's your goal first. And his goal was, follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order of spreading Krishna consciousness and preaching to everybody. So, Prabhupada often gives the example, there was one big preacher in Gaudiya Math, and there was an important event for him to go to. But it was Ekadashi, and they'd follow Ekadashi very strictly. They'd fast the day before, they'd fast the day of, no water, they'd fast the day afterwards, chant all day long, and so forth. And on that day, this devotee wasn't feeling well, on top of the fact that he was fasting. There was no way he could go and actually give a good presentation. So he was going to stay back. And the Srila Bhaktisiddhanta found out about it and said, give him the Mahaprasadam and tell him to go preach. Now you can see that same, that's an adjustment. He said, but he broke Ekadashi. Well, he didn't. He actually followed Ekadashi because he followed the principle of glorifying the Lord, which is the ultimate principle. The highest way of glorifying Him is to spread the Sankirtan movement. So, yes, it's confusing. Yes, Prabhupada's books are encyclopedic, and you can find, if you're very careful, if you go through with a very critical mind, you can say, well, this contradicts this, and that contradicts that. But if you look at an entire context, and Prabhupada said, read the books and also discuss them thoroughly threadbare. If you get around mature devotees and you talk about these principles very carefully, you'll come to a synthesis. Because this is a characteristic of the mature world. There's always these opposites facing us, and every minute, actually. And you have to make intelligent decisions. Example, in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Arjuna is faced with an impossible situation. Then he catches Ashwatthama, and Draupadi says, save him, although before she was perfectly willing to have him killed, but because she had a soft heart, she said, no, he can't kill him, his mother will feel his bad as I do right now. And then Bhima said, kill him right now. He's an offender, so kill him. So then Krishna looked at Arjuna like, okay, do what you have to do. you have to please both of them. So intelligently, he cut off the jewel from the head of Ashwatthama and he adjusted the situation.
So what you're saying is that it's a very individual thing, too. And then it ultimately is depending on Krishna gives a proper intelligence.
That's one of the things I'm saying.
I think it's an important thing. Especially there's so much conflict.
Yeah. I think the Lord should be restless since time has passed.
Yeah.
I'd like to give special acknowledgement to the devotees who are watching on the online presentation today. Everyone please say, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Welcome to all wonderful devotees. Well, I don't know if you're all wonderful, but I think you are. But I offer my obeisances to you. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.